I'd like to ask you to turn to Romans chapter 12. Now, we're headed for 1 Peter 5, but I'd like to get there by going through Romans chapter 12, the first three verses. Of these first three verses, the two that are normally preached on are the first two, verses 1 and 2. But I'm wanting to get to verse 3. So let's read these. Romans chapter 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. We're not to think of ourselves more highly than we ought. And that takes us to 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 through 7, where the subject is humility. I almost said this morning I'm proud to speak on humility, but I decided that might not be the best introduction for this sermon. I do know that people who need to hear lessons on humility are preachers. It's very easy for men to get up and read a passage about humility and exhort everybody else to be humble, not realizing that you're always preaching to yourself first. And it's especially important in regard to preachers because preachers are accorded a status before they've ever earned anything. You take a 20-year-old kid, and he's going to preach. He comes over to preach. He is given a status that he has not earned just because he's the preacher. And in the thinking of many, the preacher is just a little cut above. You know, he's white collar. And when you're young, and Paul even talks about this, about the problems of young people tending toward pride and arrogance, having a swelled head. When you're young, that can go to your head. And so you start to think your preaching is meant for everybody else, but not for you. And preachers need to first and foremost remember that when they preach, especially when they preach on humility, that they're speaking to themselves. And I'll try certainly to remember that myself this day. But we're going to talk about humility this morning because Peter is talking about it, and we've been working our way through 1 Peter. This would not have been a subject that would have been popular in the day that Peter preached it, because in the Roman world, in the Roman Empire, humility was not considered a virtue. What was considered a virtue was self-promotion, self-assertion, running over anybody who got in your path. That's what the Romans looked upon as being virtuous. And to be humble was associated with being weak. And the Romans had no use for weakness. And so the pagans did not have much use for humility. And I don't think that's changed any. I don't think our world today is any more open to the idea of humility and people being humble. Do schools teach humility in school? Is that thought important enough as a foundational part of one's character that our public school systems, our educational systems, stress humility as a quality that should be in everybody's life? No, that's not changed. It used to be when they had the McGuffey's readers, you know, 100 years ago, 125 years ago, in the English books they put together then, they would include excerpts from writings that talked about the importance of being humble. But that doesn't happen anymore. One of the famous writers from the late 19th century was a man by the name of Thomas Hardy. Maybe one of his books that you have heard the title would be Far From the Madding Crowd. That was Harding's book. And as a young man, he wanted to be a writer, and so he started writing little articles that he sent into newspapers, and his writings got the attention of people, and they started running his writings in newspapers, and it went from there to where he was sort of the J.K. Rowling of his day. They would print anything Thomas Harding wrote because it was so well written, it was so good, it sold well. They would print anything he wrote. But to the very last, when Harding would write something and put it in an envelope, they didn't have email back then, he had to write it out, put it in an envelope, and send it in, he would always include a self-addressed stamped envelope just in case the publisher that he was sending it to decided it's not good enough for our publication and they would send it back. Despite the great writer that he was, he had enough humility to recognize this might not be up to the paper's standards and they might want something else. Our age is an age of self-assertion. We've raised, in this country now, several generations of brats. Egotistical kids, self-centered kids who are worshipped as idols, who are given anything they want, who are catered to, who are taught that the whole world revolves around them. And it's like one guy wrote on the wall of a college dorm, he said, "I'm not conceited, although I have every right to be." That's the way it is with many today. And so we're probably more in need of a study about humility now than at any time in the recent past. Because humility is the soil out of which all the other Christian graces grow. All of the other virtues come from humility. We can be very successful, we can be very useful, but if we're not humble before God, we are nothing. And so I want to read 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 through 7, just three verses, but from these three verses, I think we can identify five things that Peter wants us to understand about humility. Verse 5. "Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time." Let's pick out five points about humility from these three verses. Point number one is that humility is revealed in relationships. Humility does not exist in a vacuum. It exists in the relationships that we sustain with other people. That comes out in the fact that Peter says, younger people, you submit yourself to the elders. That's a relationship between younger people and older people. And the younger people are to submit to the older people. And look at the very first word of verse 5. "Therefore, likewise." Based on what Peter had just said, and in the first four verses of chapter 5, he's talking to elders. He's talking to the rulers, the overseers, the shepherds in the flock, those who are over the rest of us. And yet, he says, young people, you follow the example of the elders in regard to submission. Likewise, just like elders have to, submit yourselves. One example that leaders, whether elders or leading in some other way, always ought to do, whether it's a father leading a family, a husband leading a wife, a boss leading a company, a teacher leading a class, elders leading a church, one example that they ought to be setting, and this is part and parcel of their leadership responsibilities, is to be humble. Not being lords over the flock. Isn't that what Peter says there in verse 3? Not being a dictator, not being a tyrant, but leading in humility. Peter's already said a lot about submission in this book. Back in chapter 2, he talked about submitting to the government. He talks about submitting to our employer. He talks about wives submitting to husbands. He talks now about the younger submitting to the elder. And to submit, we've got to be humble. Young men, as I was just talking about, young men, and also young women. Peter speaks to the young men, but I think men is to be taken here in the sense of humanity. Young humanity, young people, can tend toward being arrogant, can tend toward being proud. And the lesson, the message to them is that you're to be humble in putting yourself under the wisdom and the insights and the guidance of the older. We used to teach boys things that are just not taught anymore. It used to be taught, boys, that when a woman entered a room, you stood up out of respect. It used to be taught, boys, you don't wear your hats indoors. That's disrespectful. It used to be taught, boys, that you help women. The famous story is Sir Walter Raleigh taking his coat off, throwing over the mud puddle so Queen Elizabeth could walk across. You know, the Boy Scouts, you help the old ladies across the street. Those kinds of things used to be taught, but not so much anymore. And if you don't think older people don't have the right to give advice, to take us aside and talk about a better way of handling something, then you don't understand what it means to submit to the elder. The problem is that the elders sometimes pass up the opportunities to take some younger person aside and to suggest a better way of handling a situation. But the point is, humility exists in relationships. We are to be humble in our dealings with one another. The second thing that Peter says is that humility is to be in our action. Clothing yourselves is how Peter says it. Before there's an action, however, there must be an attitude. Attitudes lead to actions. We're to have the attitude of humility if we're ever going to get to the action of serving or to the action of submitting. Look at that word, clothed, there in verse 5. Be clothed with humility. That's the only place in the New Testament where that particular Greek word is used. Clothed with humility. And what the Greek word indicates, everybody's familiar with. Have you ever seen a woman or a mother or a grandmother in the kitchen put on an apron? You know, when a lady puts on an apron, that signifies something, doesn't it? Now, the apron's meant to keep the splatters off her. But even more, that apron is a symbol of service. She's going to cook. She's going to prepare a meal. She's going to do something for her family. And when Dad puts on the apron, what's he signifying by that? He's signifying, now I'm going to do something. I'm going to wash the dishes. I'm going to serve the family, serve my wife by cleaning off the table, by washing the dishes. And this word, clothed with humility, expresses that idea that we are to have about us an attitude, a demeanor of humble service. It's hard to talk about this without thinking about John chapter 13. Maybe Peter was thinking about John 13. What we call the Last Supper, Jesus and the disciples had just eaten the Passover meal. Christ gets up, takes a towel, ties it around him, because he's going to wash the apostles' feet. Those apostles, their attitude was, I'll let you wash my feet, but I'm not going to wash yours. You're not good enough for me to wash your feet, but I'm good enough for you to wash mine. And so nobody had washed anybody's feet. And the parallel to that in our setting today would be, nobody had put a mat out for people to wipe their shoes on. They washed their feet because they wore sandals, they'd get dusty and muddy and dirty, and they didn't want that tracked all over the house, but the woman was trying to get clean. So you come in, you wash your feet. And if you had any affluence whatsoever, you might have an old slave who would sit there at the door who would do the feet washing for you. But they hadn't done that. So Christ gets up, ties the towel around him, and he's going to wash their feet. I like the way J.B. Phillips translates Romans 12:3. He says, "Don't have exaggerated ideas of your own self. Don't have delusions of grandeur about your own importance. Don't think it's better to take than it is to give. We are to be clothed with humility, because that's what's going to allow us to be submissive to others." Third point, in verse 5, is that humility goes hand in hand with God's grace. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humility goes hand in hand with God's grace. Peter knew Proverbs chapter 3, verse 34. This is where he gets this statement. Proverbs 3:34 says, "God scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble." If you think the way to live life, the way to get ahead in life, the way to succeed in life, is to be a bully, to push and shove your way to the front, to run over anybody who gets in front of you, and that's the way you live your life, what you're going to discover is that you're going to run into a brick wall one day, and that brick wall is going to be the Lord. There's a story told about a church in Edinburgh, Scotland, that had a well-known older preacher. Everybody loved him. Wonderful preacher. Church was always full, people wanting to hear him speak. And the church decided that they needed to hire him an assistant. He was getting up in age. And so they hired a young guy to come in. And boy, this young guy was full of himself. His idea was, wait till they hear me preach. They'll forget about this old guy once they've heard me. And so came the time for him to get up to speak. And he walked into the pulpit like a peacock. And he got off to a bad start. And he knew he got off to a bad start. And the longer he went, the worse it got. And he knew it. I mean, the color is just draining from his face. He's sputtering. He's stammering. Finally, he kind of brought it all to a close. And he didn't walk down from the pulpit like a peacock. He kind of slinked down. You know, is there such a word as slunk? He kind of slunk down from the pulpit. And there's a guy out in the congregation who turned to a friend sitting next to him and said, "You know, if he had gone up the way he came down, he would have come down the way he went up. After it was all over, he would have had something then to maybe hold his head high about." But that isn't the way it turned out. God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. And there is no substitute for this quality of humility. There is no substitute to have a genuine desire in our heart to be rid of all pride. Let those who think they stand take heed lest they fall. And don't make the mistake of thinking that humility is to be equated with being introverted or with being shy. That the humble people are the ones sitting off to themselves in the corner at the party, quietly, you know, not trying to out-shout everybody else, not trying to be the center of attention, not trying to tell all the... That the humble people at the party are the ones over in the corners just unobtrusive, sitting there by themselves. You know what I've learned in life? I've learned that pride can sit unobtrusively in a corner every bit as well as being in the center at the center of attention. One of the biggest shocks I've ever gotten in my life is to get to know some couples in which the wife, in a setting like this, just seems so meek, and I mean meek in a good way, gentle, reticent, respectful. That's the way she always comes across in public. And then you're around them in private and find out she's the one who wears the pants in the family, and she belittles and ridicules and demeans her husband and just sends him down the road. And that's when I begin to realize that being quiet in public doesn't mean you're humble in heart. And so God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. There's a great character in Dickens' story, David Copperfield, Uriah Heep. Have you ever heard about Uriah Heep? Uriah Heep was always saying something like, "I'm ever so humble, Master David Copperfield." And one time he says, let me read it to make sure I got it right. "I'm the humblest person I know." And all he was doing was calling attention to himself by talking about how humble he was. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Number four, this is an important one. Humility is found under the hand of God. Look at verse 6. "Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God." Now, what does that mean? I mean, we can understand how humility works in relationships, how we are to be clothed with humility, how God resists the proud, gives grace to the humble. But when we're told to humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God, what does that mean? Well, the figure here of the hand of God probably goes back to the Exodus, because Deuteronomy talks, God talks about how "I brought you out of Egypt with a mighty hand. I reached down to you there in slavery and bondage, and I pulled you out of that situation." In Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 8, we read that the good hand of God was on Nehemiah. So what do you think it means when we're told to humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God? Let me tell you some things I think it means. Number one, I think it means that we recognize in any given situation, we're aware of the fact that more is happening than appears to the eye. That the hand of God is present in every situation. More is happening than we realize it. That God is at work. And so we recognize God's sovereignty, God's power, and we recognize God's providential dealings to express His sovereignty. I mean, I read the headlines of the papers, and it just seems to me that it's all falling apart. It's all over. Our civilization is gone and done for. And then I remember there's more going on than just what I read in the newspapers, right? The hand of God is at work. We don't see it. We may not realize it. But God working providentially to express His sovereignty, I think, is meant by this expression, the mighty hand of God. And then there's something else meant by it. God says, "Moses, I want you to go down and tell Pharaoh, let my people go." Moses says, "God, I've got a brother who talks better than I do. How about letting him go down and tell Pharaoh, let my people go?" And you know what the Lord said to Moses? The Lord said, "Moses, who made your mouth? I made your mouth. I know what you're capable of. And I'm telling you to use the mouth I made for you and go down and say, let my people go." You know why some people are so depressed and have such low self-esteem? I mean, what we're talking about right now is the biblical answer to low self-esteem. You know why they have low self-esteem? It's because they're not like somebody else. They're not as tall as fast as smart as rich as good looking as. Who made them as they are? Was it not the mighty hand of God that fashioned and created them? What does it mean to humble yourself under the mighty hand of God? It means to accept whatever situation God has put you into, whether in regard to your looks, your brains, your energy, your health, your skill, your ability, however God made you, whatever gifts, whatever talents He gave you, you're going to accept you for who you are as made by God and not be depressed because He didn't make you like somebody else. Humble yourself. People with low self-esteem, years and years ago, my good buddy Mike Schmidt told me this, and he's the first one to ever mention this. He said people with low self-esteem really are proud people. And that just seems counterintuitive. He said they're proud people, and he is exactly right, because they think they deserve more than what God made them to be. And we all need to be willing to accept the gifts we've been given, the place we've been given, the work we've been assigned, humbling ourselves under the mighty hand of God and using the talents that we have. Don't sit around judging yourself, comparing yourself with others. Paul says, 2 Corinthians 10, that is not smart. Don't do it. Thank God for the person He made you to be, for the looks He gave you, for the brain He gave. Thank God for it. For the situation He put you in, He allows you to be in. Humble yourselves and make the most of the life that God's given you. And finally, number 5, humility leads to exaltation. You see it there in verse 6, that He may exalt you in due time. You want to be lifted up by God one day, then you humble yourself now. Humble yourselves that you may be exalted. Isaiah 57, God says, I live in a high and holy place, but also with Him who is contrite and lowly in spirit. I live in a high and holy place. You know who lives there with me? The humble. The contrite and lowly in spirit. One of the scariest statements in the Bible is that about King Uzziah, gloriously helped by God, great successes as a king. But when he became strong, the Bible tells us he became proud. Because he became proud, God resisted him and made him a leper. And he lived the life of a leper the rest of his days because he became proud. We need these lessons about humility. And more than that, we need to determine to go from here. If we need to overhaul our way of thinking and overhaul our character, do some work on it, we're going to do it. Accepting the place God has placed us, being a servant to others, and anticipating the grace God will show to us and exalting us when that day comes.